The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we're tackling itchy skin with guest expert Dr. Roger Fox, of the Academic Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Associates of Tampa Bay. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through health education. And as stated, Dr. Roger Fox is with me today, and he is a professor of medicine and pediatrics at the University of South Florida College of Medicine. He's faculty member of the Division of Allergy and Immunology, and he directs the Allergy Fellowship Training Programs. Roger has been in clinical practice for 29 years, as stated before, with the Academic Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Associates of Tampa Bay. He graduated medical school from St. Louis University and is board certified in internal medicine and adult and pediatric allergy and immunology. He's also been selected by his peers as the best doctor in America for the past 8 years. Roger, it's great to have you here.
Thank you, Stephen.
Roger, we are here to tackle itchy skin, and why don't we first begin with the basics. What's the medical term for itchy skin, and what causes that sensation of itch?
Well, we call that pruritus, P-R-U-R-I-T-U-S, and that is the technical or medical term for itchy skin. And as far as what causes itchy skin, there's basically two types. Itchy skin problem that has a rash associated with it, like hives or eczema or a contact dermatitis like poison ivy. And there's itchy skin that is without a rash, and that may be caused by numerous internal medical problems. And also there are patients who just have pruritus of unknown cause, itchy skin there's no definable reason for it.
Let me ask you this question. Do we know, for example, people know they take antihistamines for the sense of itch. Is it the histamine that causes, I mean, for the listeners out there, is it actually the histamine that causes the sensation that we know as itch?
That is one of the mediators of itch. It's not the only one, unfortunately, because we have patients that take large doses of Benadryl, for example, to the point of sedation, and it does not relieve their itch. Generally, though, itch is relieved by Benadryl or other antihistamines if it's allergic type of itch. But many of the patients who have chronic itch of unknown cause or associated with other internal medical problems or even with more severe problems like atopic dermatitis, antihistamines are not sufficient by themselves to control the itch. And itch can be mind-boggling, difficult problem for people to deal with. They can't sleep. Affects the way they feel day in, day out.
So in those cases, there's still histamine release, but there's some inflammation in addition to the histamine.
That's correct.
So therefore, you need more additional therapy over and above the antihistamine.
That's correct. Yeah. So that antihistamines do block the histamine receptors in the skin that mediate the effect of histamine. Generally, histamine is released with allergic reactions, like allergic reaction to bee sting or peanut allergy. And it is very effective just for that kind of allergic reaction. But for chronic itching situations, there are, like you said, inflammation and other more complex substances being released into the skin that causes itch.
And therefore, an antihistamine would not turn off the entire reaction.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. So let's see. What you mentioned some skin disorders that, and before we go any further, let me remind our listeners out there to call in with their questions. And that's 289-1860, outside of Hillsborough County. It's area code, and this is toll-free, 877-969-8600, 877-969-8600, and call in with any question at all about itchy skin, whether it's with a rash, without a rash, whether it's red, green, blue, doesn't matter. This is your chance to call in and ask an expert a question about itchy skin. So now, Roger, you mentioned a few different skin disorders associated with itchy skin. Why don't we go ahead and mention some more?
Well, the more common ones that people think about the general lay population is allergic reactions, and that would be to bee stings, to foods or medications that are taken by the patient and develop either hives or red itchy rash. And then in that same type of problem that we see in our practice of allergy, we see patients who have chronic hives that they have every day for periods of months to sometimes years. And in these individuals, we have a protocol of treatments that are very effective in controlling their hives until they go away spontaneously.
Let's do this. And again, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but let's first define a hive.
A hive is, we call it a wheal and flare response. If we take histamine, for example, inject it into the skin, you get a bump on the skin that's red and raised, and it defines what we call a hive, which is it can be isolated to one hive to numerous hives that cover the whole body.
So a hive is a red bump that is itchy. Does it need to be itchy to be called a hive?
Generally, hives are generally itchy. There are hives that are not itchy, but that defines a totally different type of a skin disorder. But generally, the patients who have hives, their main complaint is itch.
Okay. And so these red hives, and they're seen with food allergies, and you said drug reactions as well.
And insect sting allergies.
Insect sting.
Those are the most common types of acute hive situations that itch. We see patients who have chronic hive situations, and one of them that we see most commonly, is chronic idiopathic urticaria.
Okay, what is that?
That's means chronic hives of unknown etiology. And I call them basically hives in healthy people.
Okay.
These are individuals that for months on end have been to numerous physicians and have been treated numerous different courses of therapy, and they continue having these hives, and they get frustrated, and again, itch affects their quality of life, and then we have to put them on a protocol of treatment that suppresses the manifestations of the hives, and eventually it goes away spontaneously. We have no cure for this chronic urticaria problem.
How common is this in your practice?
In our practice, it's very common. I would say that we see several thousand patients per year. In the general population, it's estimated about 0.5%, or in the United States, it equates to about 1.75 million people right now have mm-hmm. chronic hives of unknown etiology.
Now, when you evaluate a patient that comes in to your office complaining of itchy skin, and you see their hives and they're itchy, there's no history of insect bite, they're not taking any drugs which can account for it, and there's no clear food association or food allergy. Is there a blood test you run? How do you make the diagnosis? Is a diagnosis of exclusion, I imagine?
Well, by the time we often see these individuals, it's been going on for several months. They've been seen by several physicians who have obtained lab studies, which are all normal. And
what kind of labs are normally taken and studied in a patient like this with itchy skin?
Well, for chronic hives, there's nothing specific that would delineate the etiology of the hives. There are certain autoimmune tests that could be done at special labs, but those are usually not necessary. You can do a skin biopsy of a individual hive, and that may help discern what kind of inflammatory response there is. But generally, there's no test that defines it. It's a clinical diagnosis based on the fact that the patient is healthy and they've had chronic hives for many months, and it continues indefinitely for some people.
So, for example, if a person's hypothyroid, their skin gets dry,
right.
Would they necessarily... Could they develop an itchiness, itchy component to their skin?
Yeah, dry skin is another common cause of itchy skin. Dry skin is more common in some, like you mentioned, hypothyroidism. Some older individuals seem to have dry skin as they age, and moisturizers and that kind of thing does help control their itch. But they don't have a rash. They don't. I mean, other than dry skin, they don't.
They don't have the hive.
They don't have the hive. Mm-hmm. They don't have eczema unless they are putting creams on their skin that they react to, and then they develop a second dermatitis on top mm-hmm. of the dry skin problem.
How about patients with atopic disease?
Yes, with atopic meaning allergic disorders. There's hay fever, asthma, and atopic dermatitis. Atopic dermatitis is a form of eczema that may be found in family groupings that they have very specific kinds of rashes in the bends of their arms and their legs, very itchy. Usually it's in a young child and often outgrown by the time they're 5 or 6 of age. And they have some of them have food allergies, maybe a third of them, that makes their rash worse. Again, maybe 20% to 30% are allergic to dust mites or the family pet, and makes their eczema and itch much worse when they're around those environmental factors. This is totally different from the hive situation we were talking about before, but this is more of a long-standing eczema, patches of red rash on certain areas of the body.
So these are not hives. These are not elevated.
No.
Okay, so that's a clear distinction.
Yeah, and a hive comes and goes, usually like acute hives will come and go over a few minutes to an hour or two, whereas eczema may persist for weeks to years. And the same spot, the same patch. And same way with like contact dermatitis, like poison ivy, which is a form of eczema, contact dermatitis. There's allergic type and irritant type of contact dermatitis. And these rashes can last for weeks as well unless they're treated appropriately, as well as avoiding the allergen, topical allergen that's mm-hmm. causing their eczema.
Okay. We're going to take a quick a quick break and come right back with more on Itchy Skin and the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back. We are tackling itchy skin today with guest expert Dr. Roger Fox, and we began talking about itchy skin, some of the considerations regarding itchy skin and hives, and Roger was sharing with me that in sometimes patients may first see him with severe, well, even scars because the itchiness is so severe, and I guess it's been long-standing that it's I guess you'd recommend that they come in earlier than sometimes they do.
Yeah, itch is a extremely annoying symptom, and patients prefer literally pain to tolerate pain much better than itch. So they scratch their arms or their backs or their legs so severely that they destroy their skin to alleviate the sensation of itch in that area.
Okay. Now, can patients, I think we've touched upon this already, patients can itch without a rash.
That's correct. And these patients, we have to evaluate very carefully for a number of internal medical problems that I don't think our show has time to go into this differential diagnosis, but
you said like over 100 different possibilities.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, yes. And basically, anyone who has a severe itch without a rash, without the hives, without the eczema, without a contact dermatitis, just itch with a normal-looking skin, except for, you know, where they may have scratched and altered their skin from scratching so hard. Those patients should be seen by their primary care physician or healthcare provider, and perhaps get some laboratory studies and evaluations for these myriad of causes of itch without skin. But most of our patients that we end up seeing with itchy skin are healthy people who have this disorder, pruritus, and so we just have to treat that condition with the medications we have.
And the only exception to that, perhaps, is if it's, again, if the skin is dry.
That's correct.
Okay. And now, I think we've touched upon whether or not all itchy hives are caused by allergies. Many of the things we've mentioned are allergies.
Well, yeah, and that's why we see them as allergists. We see a lot of these disorders that truly aren't allergic in origin, although a lot of physicians assume that just because they have hives or they have itchy skin or that it's caused by an allergen that's something external that the person is in contact with or consume that's causing it. But unfortunately, there are internal causes of itch and rashes, and also where there's no rash at all, just the skin itself can result in this itchy problem that is not well defined.
Now, you mentioned before about bee stings, but I guess, of course, any insect bite can cause itchy skin localized.
Mosquitoes or fire ants, yes, oh yes.
And I guess sometimes it can occur in an area that it's hard to visualize, like on your back, for example. And then, so you don't know if there's and you may not even be aware of having been bitten.
That's correct. Well, mosquito bites generally are, you know, bed bugs or, you know, those kind of chiggers or gnats that may get, you know, irritate your skin.
Right.
Definitely those are a cause of itch. But generally with those, you can actually see the punctate red area and maybe multiple bites that have been that cause the itch. Mm-hmm. But a fire ant sting usually has like a little pustule in the middle of it that develops the next day. So a lot of times you can determine what bit you if you know what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And so the patients come in, we observe what what they got bit by or what they've been doing. Then you can assume that it may have been mosquitoes or fleas or chiggers or a bed bug.
Hmm. And then, of course, I guess in those cases you also have to look and be careful that it's not secondarily infected with bacteria.
That's correct. If they, this is a very common problem we see in children with mosquito bites. They get large reactions. We call them papular urticaria, and young children don't have the inhibition of not scratching, and they scratch so much those areas that they do get secondary infected, and they get impetigo, and have to be treated with antibiotics.
Mm-hmm. All right, and tell us about the so-called scratch itch cycle.
We see patients who have, pruritus that otherwise is not definable by any internal medical problems or any type of skin rash that would, you know, like hive or eczema, and these patients just scratch, and once they itch and scratch and itch and scratch, that even though perhaps the stimulus that started the whole process has been taken away, the patient may continue just that cycle of scratching and itching and back and forth nonstop until you break that cycle. You get that itch controlled and they stop scratching, because scratching itself and the healing process of that skin will induce itching in of itself. So that process of scratching is also a matter of trying to suppress that phenomenon, and then they do pretty well after that.
All right. We'll be right back with more, and we have a caller on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Itchy skin. Be right back.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600.
More in a few moments.
With SRN News, I am Michael Harrington in Washington. Iraq's president says those behind today's deadly assault against the Justice Ministry and the city government offices in downtown Baghdad are working to disrupt the political process. 136 people are dead, 600 injured. The leader of the Pakistani Taliban is promising more attacks across the country if the military does not stop its offensive into South Waziristan. The Pakistani army has claimed more ground since capturing the militant chief's hometown yesterday. New York Senator Chuck Schumer says a proposal for the public health insurance option is picking up wide support in the Senate. Schumer tells NBC the proposal, which would allow states to opt out of the program, is close to gaining the needed 60 votes. And more than 150 people turned out today in New Jersey, where Reverend Ed Hines was stabbed to death for a funeral service. Police have arrested the longtime janitor, says he stabbed the priest 32 times with a kitchen knife.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. And again, once again, I'm joined with Dr. Roger Fox of the Academic Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Associates of Tampa Bay. And Roger, what's your phone number over there in case someone wants to get some information?
813-971-9743.
And you have a website?
Yes, we do. It's allergytampa.com.
Okay. And on the line is Cynthia. Cynthia is a patient of Dr. Fox's. And if you're available and you can hear me, Cynthia, thanks for spending some of your Sunday with us.
I'm here.
Okay, great. And tell us now, do you have problems at times with itchy skin?
Yes, it started around my eyes. They would get red, irritated, and itchy.
And when you say around, I'm sorry, now, when you say red around your eyes, as an ophthalmologist, I have to ask you more questions. You say it's understandable. Is it the lids or the eyeball that itches?
It was the lids.
Okay, the lids. And upper and lower?
Yeah, and eventually spread all over my face.
Okay.
Like a rash.
All right.
A red rash.
And, okay, so it was reddened and it was itchy. Was there any scaling?
Yeah, on my eyelids.
Okay. Was there any effect on the eyeball itself, the vision, the whites of the eyes? Did they turn red as well?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so it was,
no.
It was restricted to the skin of the lids. Okay, mm-hmm. And Roger, why don't you, how did you address this problem for this young lady?
Well, I consider this a Sherlock Holmes type mystery. When we see a female that comes in with a facial eyelid rash, it could be caused by any one of a number of maybe 1,000 different substances that come in contact with those areas. That
so it's clearly a contact dermatitis issue.
Yes, it's and there's two types of contact dermatitis. One, it's allergic, which would be like people are allergic to poison ivy, or people are allergic to nickel, the metal that causes rashes on contact. Those allergic type dermatitises take days to develop. They get contact. They go out in the woods on a Saturday, come in contact with poison ivy. They get a rash 2 or 3 days later. And with an irritant contact dermatitis, it may occur after the first application, never been exposed to this chemical or substance before, and they develop a contact dermatitis that's indistinguishable from the allergic type. So sometimes the history is very helpful, and is there a new product that they just started that week or 2 weeks ago, and now they're having this rash every day from that point on, or so it becomes literally a Sherlock Holmes mystery of there are many, many possibilities. And look at cosmetics, hair products, sprays, lotions, fingernail polishes, a number of different substances our bodies come in contact with. And women very often have many more different applications on their hands, face, than a man does. So it seems to be much more common in females.
And so, Cynthia, so the investigative work began, or was it clear to you might have been the cause of this reaction?
Oh, I had a very difficult time. I quit using everything for a while.
Okay.
And then I would start adding something in, and it would clear up. And then I would use something and I'd add another product, and then I'd use something that I thought was safe, and it would come back, and I couldn't figure out which of the three products I actually used that day it was, because I thought neither of them caused me any problem. And I still haven't figured out what the problem is. It just occasionally seems to flare up. And
did you say that it actually extended beyond the lids to the face as well?
Yes.
And the cheeks, the forehead, how much of the face was involved?
The face, like where I would put my creams and makeup on.
Okay. And Roger, and I don't know if, but as far as any other conditions such as rosacea or eczema, but the patients with those other conditions seem to have an increased risk of developing this type of contact irritative dermatitis, or is it completely independent?
Well, in most cases, it's independent of these other skin disorders of the face. It has to do with just contact to sensitive areas of the body, the face, eyelids being probably more sensitive than many other areas of like the hands or feet with real thick skin. Those areas around the eye are very thin skin. So substances that don't bother other parts of the skin can penetrate that thin skin and result in inflammation and either allergic reaction or irritant contact dermatitis. And what's so difficult is that if you ever looked at the list of ingredients on any product that's applied to the face or hands, lotions. The list is usually contains, you know, 20, 30, 40 different chemicals,
yeah.
And you can't pronounce the names of them. And so the next step would be to, you know, take these four or five or six different products and start looking at the ingredient lists that are listed, and see if there's any common chemical is found in all three or two of the three, and determine if that chemical is a sensitizer or an irritant for individuals who have sensitive skin.
Did you say, Cynthia, that when you stopped all facial and eye makeup, that it went away?
Well, I had to stop, like, washing my face and wearing creams and everything, and then it would clear up if I used, like, a steroid cream.
Right.
And then I'd, like, wash my face and then maybe add one cream. And then maybe one day I'd decide to wear makeup, and I'd find the combination that I thought was safe, and then it would act up again.
Hmm. So tell me about preservatives in these cosmetics. Has that been found to be an offender?
Yes. There's a number of preservatives. Like quaternarium 15 is a very common sensitizer, and it's also found in many other products, like shampoos and hair products of that nature, and even found in steroid creams that are used to treat the rash. So, and other thing I would like to mention too is that these patients who have the dermatitis or rash, that their skin is even more sensitive during that period of time. So, she mentioned soaps and other things that may not be in of themselves causing the problem, but they just aggravate it. They make make the skin redder, itchier, until that skin heals completely. Then, but it may aggravate it along the way. And it just confounds the issue and makes it more difficult to find out what the offender is.
Is there any is patch testing for these different chemicals feasible? Is it being done?
Yes, patch testing would be the next step in this case. If we can't figure it out by Sherlock Holmes' deductive reasoning powers, and then we just do a patch test to a lot of the common ingredients of cosmetics and preservatives that are found in those products.
Hmm. Do you have any questions about this condition, Cynthia?
Well, I was concerned about the sunscreens that my products contained.
So most of your products have an additional component as a sunscreen.
Yes, and they all have different ones. And I've looked up, and some of them they have different names, but some of them actually say are the same product, and some of them might have a different strength, and I didn't know, like, if, like, I was okay with 1%, but, like, the 3% bothered me.
Well, let's just start with the generic sunscreens. Are sunscreens generally irritative to the skin and can generate a dermatitis?
Well, the PABA, the common sunscreen, is fairly commonly a sensitizer, so there's PABA-free sunscreens. We also talk about irritants and other chemicals. And in fact, what Cynthia is doing right now is to take the suspected substance, the cream lotions, and she's applying it to another site on her skin repeatedly over a period of about 2 weeks just to determine if one or another product is responsible for that rash. And if that doesn't come up you know, positive, then we have to schedule for a more extensive patch testing to a wide range of chemicals.
Mm-hmm. So do you know it? So the sun screen component of your cosmetics are PABA-free? Do you know that, Cynthia?
You're asking me if they're what?
If they're free of PABA, which is a common used sunscreen.
I would have to check.
Okay.
I know they have. I can't even pronounce the name, so I don't know exactly what's in them.
I thought you were PABA sensitive. I use PABA free sunscreens, the common sunscreens.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, that's certainly something to perhaps ensure that the sunscreen in your cosmetics is PABA free without the PABA. Do you have other questions pertaining to your condition?
No, I don't.
Okay. So sounds like when did you start this little kind of home patch testing with the different cosmetics?
How am I doing it?
How long have you been doing it so far?
Like 4 days. I think that, you know, my face is just irritated now, and it seems like almost everything I put on it makes it a little red and a little scratchy. So we started on the underside of my arms, and, you know, on testing a couple chemicals on, not chemicals, but
cosmetic
products on each side, the inner sides of my arms to see.
So it's been about four days. Any reaction yet?
No.
Okay. So I guess the investigation will continue.
Yes.
The story goes on.
Okay, well, good. Listen, Cynthia, we want to thank you for your participation today, and thank you for sharing your case. And it sounds like there's a plan, certainly, and we're optimistic, and I hope you get this resolved.
Okay, I'm optimistic, yes.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us today. Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go back, Roger, if we can, to the chronic idiopathic urticaria. You mentioned you all in your joint practices, see thousands of these patients every year. It's not known what caused this, but you did say that there is therapies that are available. Let's go into that a little bit.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, that all itchy conditions of the skin don't necessarily all respond to antihistamines, because that's just one component of pathophysiology of these conditions. And with chronic urticaria, there's a lot of inflammatory processes and cells that are found in the skin that probably mediate the rash and the itch, as well as some component being histamine. So we have mild, we have moderate, and we have severe cases, and they may not necessarily all be caused by the same underlying disorder, but the mild we can treat with antihistamines, sometimes very high doses of antihistamines to control their condition. We tell them they have to be on antihistamine 24/7, that they have to have the histamine in their skin ready and waiting for that process to explode to cause the hive. And if we have enough antihistamine in their skin, it's going to suppress it. It's going to prevent it from full expression. And then we use a combination of non-sedating antihistamines that you can buy over the counter.
Like a Claritin?
Claritin or Zyrtec. Mm-hmm. And then it's sedating antihistamines like Benadryl. And there's a couple other prescription antihistamines we can give. They're very good, but they're very sedating. So we start at low doses and build up to higher doses. There's other mediators of itch, and such as leukotrienes. And we can use a commonly prescribed drug like Singulair for hives as well. A lot of people take Singulair for asthma or hay fever, but it does help some of these patients in addition to high doses of antihistamines. And then we often have to go to really get these patients under good control and to indicate the complexity of the process of inflammation and other mediators. We have to use steroids, systemic steroids in chronic urticaria, because they have hives all over their body. You cannot treat it with topical steroids. It's not localized to one area like eczema, where you can treat with a topical steroid, like we heard from Cynthia earlier, that she used a topical steroid on her eyelids and face, a low-potency steroid, which is safe to use on the face. And in these patients with chronic urticaria, we have to use systemic steroids, and either short bursts to put them into partial remission or get it under control. Sometimes we have to use long-term management with steroids and other treatments.
We also, on a previous break, shared with me about another type of urticaria or hives that is pressure-related. And I think it would be great just to share with our listeners the extent, the variety of types of hives, or the variety of stimuli that can cause hives, because this is, again, something that I've learned myself. Mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned, for example, vibratory hives. Would you go and share some of that conversation we had?
Yeah, there's an interesting group of hives, and these are generally, again, chronic type, which means that they last 6 weeks or longer. But in these cases, they're intermittent, and they only occur when there's a physical stimulus that provokes it. And we talked about dermatographia, where you can write on the skin. Anywhere from 2 to 5% of the population has this condition. It's a very common problem that we see.
And when you say write on the skin, that means with just a fingertip, right? You basically can write. You can write out letters or numbers. You can write with putting pressure on the skin with a fingertip,
right.
For example.
We take a pen without the
no point.
Ink, no point. And just do a little tic-tac-toe in the middle of the back. And in a matter of a minute or two, that just stands out, you know, very pronounced, very obvious that it's a hive that's been produced just by that little bit of pressure on their skin.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, up to 5% of the population has this condition, and we see it, again, very frequently in our practice. And that condition is controlled with antihistamines very effectively. And there are other types of physical urticarias. There's solar urticaria. People walk out in the sun. They break out hives in the sun-exposed areas. We have patients that when they're exposed to cold, they'll break out hives in those areas that are exposed to cold. Like we put an ice cube on their skin for 5 minutes, take it off, and over the next few minutes, you get a hive the shape of that ice cube on their forearm. And there's heat-induced hives, cholinergic urticaria that's called, when they sweat, whether it's from exercise or fever or if they got in a hot shower, they'll break out with very tiny little hives that you can, by looking at them, you can often, and with that history, define what kind of hive they have. But physical urticarias generally are treatable with a antihistamine.
Topical.
Systemic like
okay.
Benadryl or mm-hmm. the Claritin we mentioned earlier, over-the-counter treatments, and then also prescription treatments.
All right. We're going to take one last break, quick break. We'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call in with your questions, 289-1860, 289-1860, or outside of Hillsborough County, 877-969-8600. Be right back.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Once again, we are tackling itchy skin. with Dr. Roger Fox of the Academic Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Associates of Tampa Bay. And we've covered a wide variety of topics here so far. And let me ask you, what types of doctors take care of patients with these chronic itchy conditions?
Well, I would say that by and large, most of the patients that are seen with this condition are seen by either the primary care physician initially, dermatologist, and allergist. Those are generally the three physicians that have to take care of the problem. And we get referred patients that are have more difficult to treat phenomenon because of the diagnostic tests that we can do, allergy testing, patch testing, even though a lot of these patients do not require that kind of treatment. We're because of the fact that they're not getting any better, the treatment's not helping them, they're sent to us as a last resort kind of thing because all the other treatments and they can't figure out what's causing their itch. They send them to us for a diagnostic workup. And sometimes we order those kind of tests. Otherwise we just try some different medical treatments that really help these patients out tremendously.
Now, during the course of the hour, we touched on how antihistamines such as Benadryl controls the itch. And you mentioned, of course, Benadryl being a sedating antihistamine. Others, non-sedating, like Claritin and Zyrtec, certainly are more nicer to use because of its non-sedating feature. Are all these antihistamines roughly equivalent in potency?
Yes. As far as blocking the histamine receptor in the skin, they're all pretty much the same, but you have to realize that a lot of these studies that have been done with antihistamines are for hay fever and not with hives. And when you're dealing with the nose, which has a small area inside there that responds to pollens and cat allergens, as opposed to the skin. The skin's the largest organ of the body, and it has a lot more histamine receptors. So we often have to use a lot higher doses of these medicines, these antihistamines, to block all the histamine receptors. And so they're fairly equivalent, but we just have to use a lot higher doses.
So for that reason, it'd be nice to be able to stick with a non-sedating.
If you can. And sometimes we find that there are other antihistamines like hydroxyzine, which is a prescription drug, actually suppresses the itch more effectively than any other of the antihistamines that we use when we're really confronted with a difficult, itchy patient.
So that's an important point, that don't get frustrated if you have an itchy skin and you've tried over-the-counter medications. There are even stronger antihistamines that are available with a prescription.
Right, yeah, we have to go with real high doses. And again, a lot of these patients do require additional therapies besides that antihistamine treatment that we talked about.
Roger, we're getting ready to wrap up. What kind of overarching message do you have for our patient, for our listeners out there? We've got about 30 seconds.
I would say that anybody has itchy skin should not wait and try on their own all kinds of over-the-counter medications. They should see their primary care physician, dermatologist, or allergist to help sort out what the cause is and try to get them under good control very quickly before they develop the scratch itch cycle or become confounded by what other people tell them that what their hives are caused by. We hear very commonly that they feel it's caused by
stress. All right, see you next week.